There comes a time in everyone's life when they realize the world doesn't make sense. For me, it came early. The foregone conclusion was that there were two kinds of people, boys and girls, and that I was a boy. But I didn't feel like a boy. Rather than attempting to score goals on the soccer field, I picked dandelions. Instead of playing cops and robbers during recess, I put on musicals. My matchbox cars sat unopened on the shelf while I spent hours in my play school kitchen. It's not that I felt like a girl. It was that both labels, boy and girl, seemed foreign, arbitrary, unable to capture anything meaningful about who I was or what made me me. Most of my friends were labeled girls. Beyond a few physical distinctions, I couldn't understand what made us so different. When the neighborhood boys would set up a fort with no girls allowed, I found myself confused. Did I belong in this game? I identified more with Christina than with Nicholas, and if Christina couldn't play, maybe I shouldn't either. That feeling never went away. As I grew up, I learned that there were plenty of other things that didn't make sense. My dad's family is Jewish, and his mother, my Oma, came to this country in 1939 as a refugee from Nazi Germany. She told me stories from her childhood about how discrimination seeped into her school. First, there was the field trip to the public swimming pool, on which she couldn't go because she was a Jew. Then she found herself banned from her school altogether, forced to go to a segregated Jewish school in the synagogue. And then there was Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, when both her synagogue and school were burned to the ground and the Gestapo arrested and abducted her father. In the days that followed, Oma and her sister secured a visa to emigrate to the U.S., brought it in person to Gestapo headquarters, and obtained their father's release from the concentration camp at Dachau. I was simultaneously awed by their brave determination and bewildered to live in a world where such things happened. It didn't make sense. To cope, I read everything I could. It turned into an obsession in second grade when my classmates and I went to the library every week to check out books. Everyone else came back with Berenstain Bears, Amelia Bedelia, and Dr. Seuss. I took home the biographies of Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, and Joseph Stalin. Dad called it my Dictator of the Month Club. As time passed, my reading list consisted of fewer villains and more heroes. Mohandas Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Abraham Heschel, Ella Baker, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta. I learned that my dad had marched with the United Farm Workers during the grape boycott and protested the Vietnam War. I learned the history of the labor movement from my mom, who worked for a union. I began to see the history of my country as a history of struggle. And while it still bewildered me that liberty and justice for all had never been the norm in America, there were always people who fought for those ideals, people who were willing to live and even die for truth and freedom. In high school, I read about the Poor People's Campaign, conceived in 1967 by Dr. King and fellow movement leaders of all colors and creeds. Together, they mobilized poor people from across America for a march on Washington, where they built an enormous tent city on the National Mall, Resurrection City, they called it, and demanded economic justice. "I think it is necessary for us to realize," King had said before the campaign's launch, "that we have moved from the era of civil rights to the era of human rights, from an era of reform to an era of revolution." Within a year, King was assassinated, as was Bobby Kennedy, one of the Poor People Campaign's fiercest proponents. The campaign's grand vision all but died with them. As a high school student, I wondered what might have been possible had King not been gunned down, and what might be possible still if someone were to pick up where he'd left off. Last summer, I got the beginning of an answer, not in a book, but at my church's national gathering in Baltimore. I was in a room with Reverend William Barber, the former president of the North Carolina NAACP and founder of the Moral Mondays movement, which brought thousands of North Carolinians from both political parties and all walks of life for weekly marches on the state capitol. There, they engaged in nonviolent direct action and civil disobedience, protesting state laws threatening communities of color, transgender people, poor people, and the environment, and insisting that public morality demands justice for all. In that room in Baltimore, in his thunderous black preacher voice, Barber intoned that he had come recruiting. 2018 will be the 50-year anniversary of King's assassination, he said, and the last thing this country needs is another commemoration. What is needed is a continuation. The only thing you can do with the assassination of a prophet to truly honor them is to reach down in the blood, pick up the baton, and carry it the next mile of the way. Barber and a coalition of leaders from all over the country were organizing a new Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, to challenge the evils of systemic racism, poverty, militarism, and ecological devastation. It was time, Reverend Barber proclaimed, to shift the distorted moral narrative of Christian nationalism and to save the heart and soul of America. My heart sang, and I joined the modern-day Poor People's Campaign. So here I am, a half-Jewish, half-Italian, genderqueer activist, parent, and pastor in Northwest Iowa. Life feels confusing a lot of the time. I have good Christian neighbors who post articles claiming that affirming gender nonconformity is child abuse. I have good Christian neighbors who own stockpiles of guns. I have good Christian neighbors who are certain that I am anything but a Christian. I worry that those beliefs and those guns might someday result in violence against me or my family. I struggle some days to find hope. But I find comfort in the words of Vaclav Havel, nonviolent freedom fighter turned first president of the Czech Republic. He said, "Hope is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out." I don't know how all of this will turn out. But moment by moment, day by day, I'm finding ways to connect with others across boundaries of gender, race, class, religion, political affiliation, ability, and sexual orientation. I'm finding ways to do the hard and messy work of building a country and a world that honors and values all of us. This finally makes sense.
Ryan Dowell Baum shared that story at Oats Live Storytelling event last month. The theme was Just Keep Going, and it was supported by One Book, One Siouxland. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week.
Finally, I asked Jose, what do you think we should do? And he did what he always does, which is turn the question back on me. What do you think we should do?
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. Our next show is Friday, June 1 at the Marquee in downtown Sioux City. The theme is belonging. Find tickets at kwit.org. You can also listen to past stories online and learn more about Ode on Facebook. The music is by Sean Blomberg, played live at Ode last year. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.
When there's nothing left to lose, I can fly right if I choose. You can buy, but you can't wear my shoes. 'Cause I've got nothing left to lose. So I'm heading home to lick my wounds. Share with my family the news. I put some miles on these here shoes. I've got nothing left to lose. So hopped a midnight train down the coast. Well, I was still wrestling with your ghost. And I caught me a bad case of the blues. When I had nothing left to lose. Spinning circles in the sand. And down came a guiding hand. To show me the way I was confused. I had nothing left to lose. When there's nothing left to lose. Well, you could fly right if you choose. Shame on me and shame on you. When there's nothing left to lose.
Thanks.